Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
You're listening to Roundtable with myself, He Young. I'm joined by Yushun in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. Coming up, check out the latest social media fad, the 75-day hard challenge, where it feels victory and defeat hang in the balance. Will you conquer adversity and emerge triumphant? Also, we discuss the pitfalls to be wary of along the journey of self-improvement. And is young people's growing love affair with fragrances a sign of changing times and economic conditions? We take a look at how the nation's youth are using scents to express themselves and find peace and enjoyment. Our podcast listeners can find us at Roundtable China on Apple Podcast. If you have a question that you'd like us to answer in a future show, whether it's about something that happened in the news or something you've been wondering about, you could email us a voice memo to ezfmroundtable@foxmail.com. Now on Roundtable, as we continue today's discussion. The 75-day hard challenge is gaining popularity on TikTok and other social media platforms. It involves undertaking a rigorous set of tasks daily for 75 consecutive days. If you commit to this challenge and complete it without interruption, it's claimed that you'll experience life-changing effects. So tell us more about the hashtag 75-day hard challenge. What is the regimen? And here's a little heads up. It is hard.
Yes. So we can see many hashtags on social media platforms such as TikTok and Reddit talking about this campaign or challenge. And we can see on the official website of this campaign, 75 Hard is a transformative mental toughness program initiated by this American entrepreneur and motivational speaker, Andy Frisella, in 2019. So it includes 6 key tasks that you need to stick to every day of the 75 period. Follow a nutrition plan and or diet of your choice. So there's no recommendation, but absolutely no alcohol or cheat meals. And 2 45-minute workouts every day, and 1 must be outside. And drink 1 gallon of water. So that's about 3.8 liter of water. That's basically 7.5 bottled water, since it's normally 500 milliliter. And read 10 pages of a nonfiction personal development focused book. And take a progress picture every day. And lastly, these tasks are rigid rules to follow in each single day of the 75 period. And you cannot modify or alter any of these rules. And if you fail to do these tasks, you have to start all over again.
So let's say if I'm on day 25 and then went out with friends, had a glass of wine, and boom, I'm back to day 1 again if I want to continue with this thing. And Josh, I just want to hear what you think about all these different things on this list. It's not like you can just do one. You have to do the whole bunch. And what? Include 2 workouts? I can't even do one, and it's asking for 2 per day. It just sounds really hard.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, it's hard to do that, but it's also hard to be miserable and out of shape. So I guess that it's kind of, for some people, it's seemingly like a worthwhile sacrifice. But I do understand that for many people, this is just not necessary, because certainly the ultimate goal must be sustainability and an overall balanced, healthy lifestyle, right? Which includes, if you want to, I think, a glass of wine at the weekend, right? So probably this challenge is more suited to certain types of people. Whenever I see these challenges, then that's kind of how I feel about them, because they're not really sustainable for most people.
Yeah. I remember years ago when I actually visited a gym, one of the trainers said that it's perfectly okay for those who are engaged in a rigorous fitness routine to have cheat meals, you know, and it's important to have them because you are a human being,
right?
And we succumb to our human weaknesses, and having like a cheat meal once a week or so, it helps you. Otherwise, you might just be driving yourself to the ground. But I guess people are different, and of course, everybody to each their own, and you find out what's best for you. But tell us, why do you think this particular challenge is trendy? Mm. It's garnered more than what? 1 billion views on right. TikTok.
Yes. So first of all, I think is that to some extent, right, this challenge improves your physical condition. And that's why a lot of people are following suit. And also, posts with this hashtag on social media platforms often include some of the comparison images of their, you know, first and last day results, which can be quite impactful. It makes people feel like, okay, maybe after 75 days of this, I can also become a bodybuilder like this. And another point is that I think the whole concept of this challenge is very motivational. Not only the promoters of this campaign, but also I have seen some practitioners on YouTube who have gained some very positive life insights while, you know, completing these challenges. People feel that this activity can have a positive impact on various aspects of their lives, whether it's personal or career part. And most importantly, it is promoted as it can help you take control of your life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are many reasons why it's so popular and why it can be very successful. I mean, aside from the fact that I think that it's quite social media driven and, you know, the community that you get with social media, you know, you could just do this on your own, right? But then you could feel like you're part of a massive community of hundreds of thousands of people that are also participating in this challenge, right? So it's quite engaging. But also, I think that when we talk about habits, right, something like this, although it may seem quite extreme, it is quite a good way, I think, to break very negative habits, right? And there is the risk, I think, that you could sort of relapse and go back to your old habits. In fact, go back sometimes even worse. I've done some of these challenges before, actually, and I've ended up.
Yeah, Josh, see, I'm glad you brought that up. Because I would feel as uncouth if I did. Because you've shared many times about aspirations, but I never had the courtesy to bring it up. Like, yeah, like what happened after Why? Taking up these challenges?
Well, most of them are great. I think that it helps me stay in, I would say I'm in pretty good shape, and I don't feel like I'm very disciplined. So I need these challenges to keep myself fit and healthy. So not all of them are successful. Sometimes I plan for things like I was supposed to run a marathon in Estonia last year. I couldn't do it because I had to stay in China because of visa issues and stuff like that. But, you know, it was very bold of me to plan to do that in the first place, you know, and I probably would have got a terrible time, you know, and I just the planning for it was not good on my part, you know, so many things were. But even though it may seem a bit irresponsible from the outside, I still, for that month, ran more than I ever have in my whole life. So there's nothing bad about that, right? And then some of the challenges I have been more successful in, so.
Can you give us like one example, one of the success stories that you haven't already shared in our Happy Place segment?
Sure. I think that probably one thing that affected my life the most, affected my sleep quality, affected my fitness, was that I just stopped drinking for about 3 months and I didn't consume any alcohol. And on top of that, I was exercising a lot and sleeping properly. But it started with a commitment on that part. And then also just committing to like not eating any candy or chocolate as well, any sugary drinks. So just sort of limiting, well, completely getting rid of sugar, not sugar completely because of fruit and stuff, right? But getting rid of sugar and alcohol from my diet. And coming from the UK where, you know, having a beer after work is considered like so normal, you know, it was quite tricky for me to do, but that was brilliant.
Yeah. And a little birdie told me that Yushun is engaged in some kind of challenge, maybe a self-imposed one, you know? So like, good for you for doing that. Can I ask, how's that going?
I am on the progress and
great.
Yeah, I actually think it is kind of a good thing that you can stick to some kind of a plan. At least this is something that you agree on and it can help you to better fit your schedule. At least, as Josh said, it is making, I think these kind of plans will make you feel fit. And of course, your sleep and your daily status will kind of getting better. And apart from, you know, just doing regular exercise thing, it is also another thing I think also it can use on these 75 hard challenge thing is that it actually cultivating a habit of doing something that is good for you. Because this whole principle, it's not purely a fitness program, right? It's also including many other challenges such as reading or persisting it, doing something difficult for like consecutive days. So it not only exercises your body, but also your willpower and resilience. So I think that is also what I was doing brought for me. You know, this is a whole process of doing something that is beneficial to you.
Right, that you have been doing and you will continue to do so. No pressure. Can I ask, like, what day are you on now?
I set a kind of a 72 days plan for myself.
Why
but
72?
It's just a schedule that's set up on this application.
Oh, okay.
For me.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I am on the 19th day.
Okay.
Congratulations. Wow. Do you feel better though? Do you feel like, how do you feel now?
I do feel better, and I can actually see a little bit of trace of abs.
Good for you, man.
While doing these kind of things. Yeah. Just a little bit of trace, but yeah, I am
working
on it.
Prove it.
Oh, my. Let's not put the man on the spot. Well, actually, speaking of, you know, the ab department and things.
Yes, I'm just about to ask it.
Oh, really? Well, actually, I have developed a habit of doing crunches, 100 crunches.
I saw a crunch bench next to your desk before.
Yeah.
I assume it's yours.
In the
office.
For
her.
Okay.
That's yours, right?
No, it's for everybody to use in the office.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. The communal crunch bench. Of course.
Yeah.
Every office must have one.
Okay. So here's my hardcore real life habit. I do 100 crunches every night before I go to bed, and I've been doing this for 20 years.
Wow.
And yeah, talking about fabulous abs, it's not something that is that difficult to get, in my opinion. So I think the most important thing, like you said, is to develop into a habit. And when, let's say I had a huge dinner and physically I just could not do it before bed, but then I would just, my body is like telling me, oh, I'm not comfortable. And then it's like, all right, then I'll go to bed, go to sleep. But I'll have to do it in the morning to make up for it. And then it's like your body's reacting to you breaking the habit. And I think, you know, once you've established that kind of routine, then it's not a miserable thing that you have to follow every day. It's just become something you do. You don't give it any second thought. I'm curious, does the 75-day challenge really work? And is it really that healthy?
I think at least some of these rules in it can indeed bring you some benefits. For example, the rule of exercising and eating healthily and eliminating all of your alcohol consumption, it is a good habit to cultivate. And it's good for our sleep, of course, and immunity and mood, and even saves a lot of money. And reading and keeping a record of our progress, these habits can help us become more organized and offer a sense of accomplishment and motivation to something that it's hard to achieve, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to admit that some of these rules are kind of rigid. It's just a bit too rough. First of all, this level of exercise intensity may not be suitable for every individual, or for example, these with no exercise backgrounds, right? And another one is that it may not be very reasonable to have no rest at all for 75 days, because everyone may need rest or similar breaks every month, or say every 2 months at least, right? So even if you are exercising in a gym, I think these coaches or trainers would recommend giving your muscles some rest time to recover and become stronger. So
yeah,
I think we need to consider according to our own situation while doing these kind of challenges.
Well, I think that this challenge probably does work for some people. Otherwise, it wouldn't be so popular. Whether or not it is something that is long term and is going to be sustainable, maybe there's a potential for burnout or something like this. I'm not so sure, but it's all about consistency. But I just think personally that whatever gets you up and moving and gets you exercising and doing healthy things generally, I think is a good thing, because it's just a way to break those negative habits. There is always a risk of going back to those bad habits afterwards, but I think there's much more pros than cons to this. So I think that generally it has shown to be successful, these kind of challenges.
Yes. And also, by the way, I think another thing is that one size does not fit all. Everybody is unique in terms of their body condition. So also, aside from the water content in regular food, an adult generally need to consume around 2 liters of water. Specific water intake can be adjusted based on, you know, the intensity and duration of exercise on that day, and that is varying from person to person. And 1 gallon sounds just a little bit too much for a person who, you know, they will also have, you know, daily food that with water intake.
Okay, so according to the dietary guidelines in China, healthy adults generally need to consume 1.5 to 2 liters of water per day, and that's about half a gallon. So I suppose this is something to do with the body mass. If you're like a massive person, like double my weight and height or something like that, then you probably need 1 gallon of water. But if you're like a petite little person, then I don't think you need that much, and you could be visiting the bathroom every hour.
And yeah, and also that's probably not good for your kidney.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I agree with Josh's inspirational speech just now about, yeah, like, I think the whole point of this is to get you moving and get people motivated. It's almost like a motivational rule instead of a rigid goalpost, maybe, for people to follow. But some people are like, yeah, I just have to follow this religiously, otherwise how am I going to motivate myself? So this is like a little bit of a paradox sometimes. But I do like to highlight a couple of things that might potentially be pitfalls for us living in the social media age and being engaged in this kind of challenge. One point is that with this kind of challenge, which could be quite specific about what you can eat or what you can't eat, or some of these challenges actually do impose a certain calorie figure on the amount of intake every day, and this could harm your relationship with food. We know most diets that restrict calorie intake and list good and bad foods are unsustainable in the long run, and it sometimes leads to people drastically reducing their calorie intake or cut out a whole food group. And this could be dangerous for people's health, especially if they've increased the amount of exercise they're doing as part of the challenge. And also, you cannot stress enough our mental health in all of this. It may suffer, maybe, because, you know, pursuing the 75 hard challenge or these kind of pursuits might play into this all or nothing thinking. Either you're mentally tough or you're failing and there's no middle ground. And if you can't keep up with the intensity of the challenge, you might feel like you're not good enough, and it could have detrimental impact on one's self-worth. And don't let us get started on taking daily progress pictures. This level of self-surveillance and comparison could result in poor self-esteem and body image, which is ironic considering that the challenge is supposed to increase your self-worth. Yeah, this photo thing, I think, has become a hallmark of the social media age. And I just think that for a lot of young people out there, it's kind of just important to have this reality valve or this reality check of awareness and not like fall for this blindly. Ultimately, please be kind to yourself and recognize that you can work towards your goals with what you have available to you at the time. And it doesn't need to be all or nothing. Progress over perfection. Hearts. Coming up next, the fragrance industry in China is on the upswing as a new generation of consumers embraces scents for self-expression, stress relief, and comfort. Join us on this aromatic exploration. Stay tuned.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West, and understanding is the goal.
It's the hour of Roundtable with myself, He Young. I'm joined by Josh Cotterell and Yu Shun on the show. More Gen Z and millennial individuals are expressing a strong interest in fragrances, including perfumes, scented candles, and essential oils. Some enthusiasts go as far as drying flower petals to create their own scent blends for homemade potpourri sachets. That sounds really nice. Guys, how big is China's fragrance market now?
So we can see in recent years, there has been a gradual increase in consumer attraction to these fragrance-related products, marking the rise of olfactory economy. And as what we've mentioned, various fragrance products are becoming increasingly prominent in daily life, like the perfumes, essential oils, and scented candles. And also, according to CBN Data and Tmall.com, China's fragrance industry is projected to reach a value of 38 billion yuan, or 5.3 billion US dollars by 2026. The untapped market potential is huge, given that perfumes have penetrated only 5% of the Chinese market, compared with 42% in Europe and 50% in the US.
Yeah, well, we see a similar trend in the UK and US, actually, with growing economies and more increased disposable income. I think also, again, the influence of social media, like platforms like Instagram, Xiaohongshu, TikTok, Douyin, and such, they play a pretty significant role in shaping trends. And we know that a lot of content creators, as well as promoting health trends, fitness trends, sustainability, all of these kind of things, they also endorse a lot of products, and fragrance is included in a lot of the time, included in sort of the healthcare market, right? You'll often see fragrance perfumes being sold in healthcare stores, and a lot of these influencers now are actually getting paid to endorse some of these fragrances. So I think there's also a bit of a shifting attitude towards fragrance culturally and self-care and things like this for younger generations. So it's not just, you know, a way to smell good, but also a way of self-expression, right? Mm-hmm. Or again, to smell the same as your favorite influencer, right? Maybe your favorite influencer even has their own perfume, right? Or their own line or something like this.
Yeah. Apparently, was it during the 2010s? It was almost like you don't qualify to be a celebrity if you don't have your own fragrance. And
wow.
Anyway, I think now with this fragrance market, it's just expanded to different aspects of daily life, it feels. You could be lit a candle or those diffusers and to help you go to sleep. See? Closed loop now. Today is a wellness program we are hosting. So yeah, in fact, the use of scents in China dates back thousands of years. This is something that our predecessors have been doing long, long time ago.
As early as the Han Dynasty, that's 202 BC to 220 AD, incense was employed for its healing properties, while perfumes were crafted from an array of balsams, flowers, and plants. And burning incense has been a crucial aspect of prayer rituals since ancient times, often used to seek good health and happiness, or to honor ancestors during important occasions. Mm-hmm. And throughout the ages, however, the use of scents didn't play a big role in the lives of the average person. But nowadays, we can see that, you know, a lot more people are getting into this kind of area, at least buying these. At least I can see a lot of buying a lot of scented candles to actually, no matter, they're not for lighting, but for the smell.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing is that the rising, I think, living standards have led to an increased focus on their personal enjoyment and sensory experiences. And also, of course, we've mentioned the influence of online platforms. A lot of people sharing their lifestyles, and most of their lifestyles include a Instagrammable picture with candles in it. I think these kind of a room settings with a scented candle in it are actually attracting a lot of people and making a lot of people following suit. So so both of these factors are leading to the increase of the fragrance economy, I think.
And also, the fragrance products have expanded into areas such as household cleaning products, car refresheners, and personal care products. So I think this range of products have also expanded to such a great extent that didn't used to exist. And the embrace of fragrances by China's younger generations can be connected to a passion for life, possibly. Fragrances are often seen as a way to enhance and enrich daily experiences, adding layers of sensory enjoyment to their lives as young people explore different scents and create their own unique blends. It reflects a broader enthusiasm for experiencing life to the fullest and expressing themselves creatively. And that brings us to the end of today's roundtable. Thank you so much, Josh Cotterell and Yushun, for joining the discussion. You can find us on Apple Podcast at Roundtable China. I'm He Young. We'll see you next time.